back to Red Ice TV, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today. Great to have you with us. As always, I'm Henrik, and we are joined today by Ramsey Paul. Thank you for coming on, Ramsey Paul. Good to speak with you again. It was a while ago. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, it's always been. I've been on your program before, and I've seen you in Sweden and other places, so it's been great to see you again. So how have you been doing?
Very good, thank you. Keeping busy as usual, a lot of things, a lot of ups and downs. You know, we talked about that before we came on here, before we started the recording, and, you know, some days there's a lot to laugh about. There's a lot of things going in the right direction. People are waking up. They're seeing through the lies. They're seeing through the media. They're seeing through the propaganda. And then other days, Ramsey, I got to say, you know, it's hard and it's tough, and we're being squeezed at every turn, it feels like. And morale is up and down. How are things for you on that note?
Oh, I've been blackpilled. But that's kind of my generation, though. I was like the first of the Generation X, and we came after the boomers that were all optimistic about peace and love. We're like, it all sucks. So we were like dazed and confused. That was our motto. So, it's been a kind of a bad few weeks with the whole Trump agenda and where things have gone. And I don't know. He looks like he's kind of quit to me. Is it to you, or is it just kind of my take on that?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of kind of weird things that's happened. Let me actually go over to this angle here, and we can talk about some of the tweets that you put out on this. I wanted to get your take on the midterm, rather, sure, and talk about that a bit. But we can, while we're on Trump, let's just begin there. Right? How has he performed? What has he done? Things seems to collapse. There's two different things that happen. Of course, you mentioned this in your tweet, just like listed basically the things that he'd done for Israel. And despite that, of course, most of the Jewish people have turned against him in the midterms, right?
It just shows his strategy is so. I said before, I really love the Trump that goes to these rallies. I love the Trump that's on Twitter. I really like that guy. But the guy that governs is like totally different. It's like they have two people there. It's like schizophrenia or something. It's really bizarre because what he actually does is not a whole lot, except for stuff that we don't really care about, like move an embassy to Jerusalem. I don't think he won Ohio because people sitting around the kitchen table were like, you know, the trade with China is getting bad. We could lose our job. We're having troubles with health care. What are we going to do? Someone says, you know what we need? We need to move the embassy to Jerusalem. That would make things better. No one says that. No one gives a crap about that except for maybe Jews, and I don't know why Jews would, because they're supposed to be good Americans, but, I mean, and really, would you care about where the embassy is in Budapest or something? It's one of those irrelevant things, but he focused on that he's kissing the butt of his donors, and he thought that's kind of payback, but it really didn't help. It didn't help him in the election, the midterms we saw. It didn't even help him with the Jewish vote. I think Hispanics vote more for Trump than Jews. So this whole strategy of trying to suck up to them has totally failed. It doesn't make sense. We wanted the wall. We wanted to get out of these foreign involvements. That's what candidate Trump talked about. You know, he said, why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we fighting in Syria? We need to get out of there. And we haven't seen the Trump that governs following through on that. And I want that Trump. That's who I want.
I agree. I think something really bizarre is happening on that note. I think it's the Trump that knows to speak to his base and still, on one hand, address their people, what they want, the things that they're concerned with. Then when he's back with his administration in the White House, it's globalist puppet Trump that's like can't really make a move. And it's almost like he knows it to a certain extent. It's almost like that there's limitations to what he can do. And of course, people have speculated, why is that? Why does he bring on these other people? Why do he bring back some of these neocons and stuff? And one of the recent moves that Ann Corcoran pointed out, we can talk about that article here a little bit, is that Obama, one of the Obama guys, who was the director of refugee resettlement, he's going to be continuing that role. You know, it's just like, what is he doing? I mean, he knows about this stuff. He should be getting these people out and getting the right people in place here. What's going on with this?
I don't know. He's like a tease. It's like you're interested in a girl and then, you know, say if you don't understand girls and she keeps giving you excuses. Yeah, I want to go out with you, but I'm busy that day. So yes, another day. Oh, I can't. I really want to though. And it goes on. And eventually you got to figure out, wait a minute, this is serious. And that's what Trump is. He's a tease. He kind of lets us on, right? So we get all excited. And for example, the wall, he didn't put funding in the spending budget for the wall. And then he came out and said, oh, well, I hated this spending deal. Next time, I'm going to veto this. So, but I'll let it go this time. But next time, you Republicans, you got to put the wall money in there. There is no next time now because we lost the House of Representatives. So that's just an example. I know he's not a dictator, but still he could do these things that say, hey, I'm going to veto this bill. I'm going to fight with Congress until they put it in, and it's going to get bloody because that's why I came into Congress. That's why people elected me. That was my, you know, the wall was his primary position. Tax cuts, yeah, they're nice. I'm not going to counter-signal it. That's Jeb Bush, right? Jeb Bush would have gave you tax cuts. Rubio would have gave you tax cuts. That's the basic bitch Republican position. We need something that differentiates him. And again, he talks a good line. You know, just today he said, put America first. I'm like, well, yeah, that'd be great. Why don't you start doing that?
Yeah, exactly. It's very confusing. So the line from the article goes that Lawrence Bartlett, who was actually removed temporarily from his position as the director of the Refugee Resettlement Agency last December, as President Trump promised swift hiring changes with his famous Drain the Swamp commitment. Less than a year later, Bartlett is returning to run the Refugee Resettlement Program despite his working for Obama since 2010 as the agency's director, and the agency is the Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. And, you know, the question remains, I guess, or should be asked, though, all things to the side, even with illegal immigration. We'll talk about the caravan and some of this stuff later of what's happening with that. But even legal immigration, Ramsey, is a problem for America in terms of the demographics, in terms of the fertility rates of European Americans and stuff like that. And I guess Trump really, he wants, you know, people to come in legally into the country. But I mean, that's still replacement level migration that we have there. There's over 1 million people a year, right?
Right. And that's, for example, he says he's a nationalist, which I'm excited about, and I think most of us are. But nationalism, it comes from, I think, the Latin word nazio or something like that, which means birth. For example, you've heard of the neonatal care, natal, that's like nation, is birth. So nation means people that are related to each other, a group of people, like the Jews are a nation or the Cherokee nation. They're people that have a common ancestry. And that America was founded as basically a 90% common European heritage. It wasn't 100%, and I'm not going to fight over ethnic purity, but that's what it was. It was a Christian, English-speaking nation, not perfect, but it was our homeland. And now they said, well, we're a nationalist, but we want to let everyone in, every language, every religion, and no, we're not English-speaking, and we could be Muslim, that's fine. We could put Sharia law in, that'd be fine. Because we're everything. Well, if you're everything, you're nothing. And so it's a stupid statement to say that you're like a civic nationalist. That's saying I'm a vegetarian that eats meat. It's nonsensical. And that's what they're pushing. But that's an example, right? Because he throws his base, this red meat, the words we like, nationalist, but then they redefine it into something that's just totally meaningless. And in fact, I think once Trump did famously said, I'm a nationalist and I'm a globalist. Like, what the hell does that mean? But so I'm really suspicious of, and maybe he's got good intentions. I don't know, but it's definitely not being implemented in policy. Like your example, I mean, the people he surrounded himself with have been horrible. And, I've never understood that. And he points these people, then he bitches about them that he doesn't like what they're doing. I'm like, well, hello, you're their boss. Why don't you do something about it?
Yeah, it shows that the president doesn't hold all the power, rather. There's a lot of string pulling behind the scenes. This was interesting, too, though. Trump gave the U.S. Medal of Freedom to one of his biggest donors. Actually, not Sheldon, but the wife, like Miriam, right? Miriam, the physician's wife. Of casino magnate Sheldon Adelson received the Presidential Medal of Freedom in a ceremony in the East Room of the White House today, along with six others. Even Elvis Presley got one too, by the way. Great.
Well, I know this Thanksgiving, I encourage all Americans to give thanks to Miriam, is her name?
Miriam.
For helping restore our freedoms. Thank you, Miriam. You deserve the medal. You saved the day. Because of you, we have all these freedoms, like a freedom of speech, right?
Oh, geez. Israeli born, right? So, you're on some clinic there, fighting drug addiction, la-di-yada. But
really? I didn't know that. I thought they were Irish. Oh, that's weird.
Ailton and her husband have been increasingly prominent funders of the Republican Party. And, of course, in 2016, that's when Trump reached out to Ailton specifically and asked for, what was the number here? In 2016, right? They donated $46 million to the fund, right? The RNC fund, which is pretty amazing, right? They have a lot of money in it. So people say, Ramsey, that it's these people that are pulling the strings on Trump, and it's these people that are telling him ultimately what he can or can't do. What do you make of that?
Well, democracy really is just rule of the rich. I hate to break it to people that may have all these nice ideas, you know, because if you have the money, you can buy the media, you can buy the propaganda, you influence the institutions, you can even buy the politicians. And so if you have the money, you can direct the policy and you can direct people's behavior quite a bit. So that's what democracy is. That's a fundamental flaw of democracy, is that you just have people that have money and they can get their policies through. And that this is an example, right? This is probably, by the way, we moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I guarantee you 98% of the Americans, they don't give a crap about that. But this guy did, and he gave them a lot of money. So, you know, he wanted some payback, and that was the payback. Plus, his wife got the medal, so I'm sure they got it above their mantle. And a true American hero.
I'm sure Sheldon already has his medal, you know, from like last year or something like that. But yeah, and this is what happens, of course, as they say, the rule is those who have the gold, the money, they make the rules or whatever. But
I would be embarrassed to win the medal, because what's he going to say? They say, oh, you won the medal. What did you do? Did you lead a victorious battle in a war? Or did you cure cancers? Like, I know I'm married to the guy that donated a lot of money to the program.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, woo. Well,
congratulations. Real American hero. We salute you.
Yep, exactly. Amazing, amazing. But yeah, this is what we've become to be accustomed to, unfortunately, with a Trump presidency. Now, there was another interesting story. There's a lot of things we're going to go through, but tell us about the midterm. What was your takeaway from the midterms? We're seeing a new faction, I guess we can call it, within the Democratic Party, which is increasingly radicalized, increasingly pushing harder towards the left than the old guard, like the Pelosi's and the Tim Kaine's and Joe Biden's, right? Not that they're, right, you know, not plenty anti-white, etc., but we have a new level coming in. And what's the look at it for 2020 here? Are these the people that are going to be running the Democratic Party eventually? What do you think?
Eventually, I hope so, because the current party, the leaders are very old and they're kind of stuck in the past. And it's funny because they're promoting all this anti-whiteness, all this diversity, and their monster has come back to devour them, which it will. Because pretty soon, if you're a white male that's a heterosexual, it's going to be very difficult to be in a national position in the Democratic Party, because you're inherently evil and you have white privilege and all that. So I do see these younger people really, and more of the minorities, becoming the face of the Democratic Party, which is good, because it makes it more explicit as the Republicans become the de facto white party. And I know the Republicans hate that, and they'll get some big, you know, base black guy and then put them on the podium, and they'll be all excited about that. But let's face it, it's primarily now the white party. And when you have multiculturalism, which I oppose, but if you have multiculturalism, you're going to have identity politics. There's no way around it. It's just not the United States. And we're seeing that now even with whites are going to start embracing more identity politics, because they have to. Years ago, when I was a kid, when we were basically an 80-90% white nation, Republicans and Democrats, they could quarrel about economic policy or even foreign policy, but that's increasingly becoming irrelevant. And people that still talk about, oh, we got to fight the socialism of the Democrats, I'm like, what the hell? You're like 30 years behind the time. It's all now demographics.
Yeah, exactly. It is. And there are some pretty outrageous, comments coming out in the wake of this too. In terms of like how hard they're pushing against, the old guard that it just happens to be white. So as you say, I mean, it's like the Republicans, they can't keep up with this. They don't understand that it's like a whole new voter base that's being imported from the caravan and from all the illegal immigration. Even the legal immigration is like a big, huge voter base. Even in Florida, they passed a law that convicts, right, former convicts could come in and vote. And it's like, yes, that's a whole Democratic base right there, right? Who's going to vote for a Trump that says, I want firmer laws and order and structure and crime, harder crime, right?
the whole felon thing, this is interesting because someone sent me research on it. You know who is pushing it? It was this lady who is on the chairman of the board of the AIPAC committee, the American Israel Political Action Committee. It's one of the most powerful committees in the United States, more powerful than the Russian influence in both the Democrats and the Republicans. So here's this lady whose primarily loyalty is to Israel, for some reason is getting involved that, hey, we need these felons to vote. And everyone knows felons are majority not white, and they're going to vote Democrat if they vote. So why is this lady that's supposed to, she's on the chairman of the board of this committee to get money out of the United States to Israel. Why is this a concern of Israel? See, this is just ridiculous. And these Republican cucks that just continue to say, oh, Israel's our best friend. We need to send them all this money. They're our good ally. They don't see these groups are doing, they're coming here and they're trying to basically directly meddling with our democracy. This is a lot worse than some Russians buying some damn Facebook ads, but this is just not even really covered, and it's factual. This has happened. These are what they're pushing, and this, yeah, we lose Florida, and we, meaning the GOP, then never again will there be a Republican president.
Exactly, and that's really what we're looking at. There will be no more Republicans because they have become, of course, the de facto white party, whether they like it or not. That's where the retreat is happening, if you will, of white people, and it's definitely going to be divided along that line. And I've said many times, how are you going to have a president? How are you even going to have a party that's going to be appealing to 350 million people, probably more even in four years, that have all these different backgrounds, different languages they speak, different cultures, different ideas about how they want to live their lives and stuff? Is it going to basically be an impossibility of being a president? It's only going to be on the basis of if they look like me, right? People are going to vote for, is it a person to represent someone who looks like me? And even the Democrats had these, I don't know if you saw these, but Dems so white. I played this with Kevin McDonald when it was on. And some people said it might be a joke, but it might not be. They said they want a Democratic Party that looks like me. It was a slogan or a hashtag that was going around. Democrats are so white, so let's replace them all and have people that just look non-white. Then they'll be happy.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely gone beyond the point. Remember, I'm old enough to remember back in the 80s and 90s, all the liberals, they loved a virtue signal like, oh, was the guy black that we hired? I didn't even notice. I literally had a girl say that I just don't even notice. I don't even see race. That was a big thing they were doing back then is, oh, I can't even see race because I'm colorblind, like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. taught us. And see, that was their big thing. But now if you do that, you're racist. You need to see race and you need to look at whiteness, and whiteness is evil. And then, of course, though, if we say, you know, we need to have pride in our white identity, the first thing they say is, what do you mean white? What the hell is white? I don't even know what you mean by white. But when it's talking about other things, like how many people have jobs or whatever, oh boy, they could determine what's white then. So that's no issue then.
No, exactly. We even had some guy, let's play this clip. This is pretty interesting. I'm going to get your take on this. Here's he's in a media director. He's the Steve Clifford. He's the CEO of Pay Machine, how he trashes America and how to stop it. I forget what his position was. I think it was either a big magazine or a TV production house or something. Let's just listen to this.
So my main follow-up question for you would be, when you were talking about the impact of voting, specifically we have the midterms coming up,
right?
What would you like to see from the Democratic Party heading into the midterms, the message to the voters in the home stretch of the of the campaign?
Well, first, I'm not a campaign consultant, and I think they have to get off the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump. Every voter knows that Donald Trump is Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton spent $450 million to every day say Donald Trump is Donald Trump. I think they've got to tell the voters why they're going to be better off with a Democratic House or Democratic Senate, rather than just say Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what Governor O'Malley told me in an interview recently, that if they're just anti-Trump, anti-Trump, and they're forgetting what they stand for, it will impact them.
And, you know, anti doesn't get people out to vote enough. I mean, it's got to help me.
Right, right. And one other one, you talked about prohibiting straight males.
Straight white males. straight white males. Yes, this is. I wrote about this in 2012. I think it's the only hope for democracy in America, and I will be leading a great movement to prohibit straight white males, who I believe supported Donald Trump by about 85%, from exercising the franchise, and I think that will save our democracy.
Yeah, there you go. So basically, prohibit. He's a TV CEO that was King. What was it again? King Broadcasting Company, National Mobile Television. He said, let's just ban straight white males from voting altogether, but to save democracy. It's like, okay, but wait a minute, what's going on here? You know?
Well, I kind of agree with, I would argue with him. I guess you're right. We were probably not compatible, so we need our own homeland so we can no longer impress you. That's just a logical solution then. And so I think he was being a little tongue-in-cheek there, but it still shows you couldn't even be tongue-in-cheek with any other ethnic group, obviously, and say this ethnic group should not be allowed to vote. You'd have to apologize. You'd have to resign. But when they come down really hard like this, it really makes my position an easier sell, because I don't really have to disagree with them. I can say, okay, you're basically saying it's impossible for us to live together in harmony. And I agree with you. Diversity doesn't work. You're basically saying diversity can't work. And so what's the solution? The solution is that we have our separate homelands, like Hungary for the Hungarians, Poland for the Polish. That's how we can do it. So in a sense, when they do this, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It helps promote our point of view.
Yeah, that's actually true. To a certain extent, they make our work really easy. And the harder they push, the more they push, the more bold they are when they push. It just brings people to our side. And they wake up and wait a minute, what's going on here? I thought we couldn't discriminate against people. I thought, being racist towards other people is wrong, right? And all of a sudden, they just changed all that and switched all that. But it shows, Ramsey, that it's not about bringing these other people, that supposed oppressed classes, up. It's about holding white people down. It's about destroying what they have. It's about destroying what they've built. And that, they think, is going to lead to equality, right? It's like, let's assume that we're here and they're here, whatever. Let's not bring them up here. It's like let's crush us so we all end up the same and on the same level, right?
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, like I said, a lot of these radical on the left, they're a little bit more honest than, let's say, like a Ben Shapiro or someone on the right that, oh, I don't even see color. Everyone sees colors. People are different. And they basically are saying, yeah, people are different, especially you evil white males. Now, obviously, I disagree. I think we white people do some pretty cool stuff. But I don't even have to get in an argument with them about that. I'm like, okay, if we really suck, then you should probably stay out of our countries and we'll stay out of your countries. We'll have separate homelands. And yeah, we suck. We don't have you around. But hey, you'll have the blessing of not being around white people. But strangely, they just get into a panic, if that's ever suggested. It's like they have a constitutional right, or in the world, a human right, to always be around white people. So there's this whole tension, because they want to blame white people for everything. But the idea that they're not around white people just sends them into a panic, because they know then it sucks if there's not white people around. It does. If you have a country, excluding, let's say, some Asian countries, but when you talk about Africa and even Central America, that's true. The wider it is, the more prosperous it is.
It is remarkable. It's kind of strange, isn't it, that the proximity to whites lead to oppression, it seems like, on one end, right? That it's like you can't just be around them. They're repressive of whatever they do. But as you say, as soon as you suggest that, well, just like go back home then. So, do you see the Indian lady? I'll pull up her name here in a second, but she was tweeting up a storm, as they say, about Donald Trump in terms of how much she hated white people. And I think that she was from your home territory, Colorado. She didn't win a position, but she was super anti-white, and she was just coming out. Did you see any of her tweets?
I might have. In Colorado, that's another sad story. Colorado, when I was raised, was a red, red, red state, yeah. Very conservative, cowboy energy. It really was. And then all of a sudden, we had all these refugees from California, because Californians, they implemented their diversity, and they're so progressive. And then all of a sudden, they're like, oh, shit, we hate this state. So they leave, and they come to places like Colorado. I love Colorado. It's a good school. It's a good environment. There's not much crime, but there's an issue. We don't have enough diversity. So then they started implementing their policies, and now Colorado's gone to shit. I mean, still a beautiful state, but the policies are horrible. And that's an example of what happens with the state. But to get you back to your other point, yeah, it drives me crazy. It's like the caravan that a couple of weeks ago, there's a famous thing, someone from Honduras or whatever, they're burning the American flag and saying that Trump is like Hitler and they're so evil and oppressive and damn it, we went in. They better not stop us from coming in. I'm like, does this make sense? It'd be like if you're a Jew in 1935 that says, we have a right to be in Germany. We got to get in Germany. You can't keep us out. The Nazis are trying to keep us out of Germany. We want to get in there, but they're so oppressive. See, it doesn't really make sense because they know they're not oppressed here. They want to get in because they know it's easier here than their crappy country they came from. And we didn't make the country crappy. They made the country crappy. And if they come here, they're going to make our country crappy. In fact, even Mexicans don't want them. I mean, there's almost a riot in Tijuana because they're like, get the hell out of our country. Why are you traipsing through our country? We don't want you. So it's, everyone has a right to our homeland. And their actions so they show that they really don't believe their own words.
It's strange that it's so obvious what the tactic is. As you said, I mean, they came with Honduran flags and in the big caravan and stuff. It's like, wait a minute, you're wanting to flee one country for another. But, you know, the usual suspect, Ramsey, has been exposed again. There is a company or a...
Russians.
Right, it's Russians, exactly, of course. Those damn Amish is at it again. The Finns are trying to change the demographics of America. yeah, exactly. So it's terrible. You know, the organization, I forget the name, was out of Chicago. The usual suspect is almost like boring because you can fall back on Soros every damn time, and he's not behind everything. No, there is other people, there's other organizations, but in this case, he donated like $4.7 million to them in 2015 or something like that, and we don't know how much money has been given to them consequently. But there's organizations sitting in Chicago coordinating this effort. They're making sure they have transportation, all these things along the way and stuff, and to bring them up into America. So it's obviously like a wedge issue. They want to divide America further on these kinds of issues and just flood the country with people who come with their own flags. You know, it's just bizarre.
Yeah, well, those people always say, hey, well, if diversity is an enrichment, people have a right of global migration, then we need to share some of the enriching with Israel. And, oh, boy, that gets them mad all of a sudden. They really don't have an answer to that except, I'll call you a Nazi or something. But it just seems logical because they're pushing out on other countries they should want to end their ethnic homeland. But you suggest that. It's like, oh, no. Israel needs to remain for the Jews. In fact, why do you hate us so much to suggest such a thing? I've heard them literally say that. I'm like, well, why are you doing it to us? I mean, it's just like, I don't mind you having your homeland, but respect our homeland. Mm-hmm. But this double standard is crazy. My hope people are starting to see through the double standard just a little bit. Doesn't mean you have to hate Israel. It doesn't mean you hate the Jews. It's just like, hey, the Jews want their homeland and they don't want people coming in. They don't want, even through legal immigration, they don't want Israel to become non-Jewish. Oh no, by the way, you know who else doesn't want that? The United States Congress. And I keep linking to this. It's not a conspiracy theory. We passed in 2012 that we recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Not just as a state, but as a Jewish state, an ethno state. And you can argue that, well, Jews aren't necessarily a race, but that's fine. I mean, white people have different ethnicities too, but it's still an identity. And we, as white people throughout the world, either Romanians, Hungarians, Germans, we want the same courtesy. That's all we're asking. And we hate this double standard that we need to open our countries to all the third world. But the people that tend to advocate this are almost always opposed to this happening to Israel, their ethnic homeland. And they never can explain why, except to call you a Nazi if you call them on it.
Now, the spin to all this with the midterms and stuff is that there is a guard coming into the Democratic Party that is not as vehemently pro-Israel as the old guard has been, right? I mean, AIPAC, they pride themselves on their bipartisanism. They even have, if you go to AIPAC's YouTube channel and check out like their 101 videos and stuff, they're just out in the open. So it's like, no matter who's in power, we're always there. We have full control and it's always going to be support for Israel, blah, blah, blah. But this new guard that's coming in seems not as hot on Israel as the old guard does. So do they know what they're doing? What if let's say that some of these new Democrats are getting into power, totally changes the attitude towards Israel. Do they really want that? I mean, what would happen, do you think, as a consequence of that for Israel in the Middle East?
Well, that's what's the consequence for these candidates. Do they want funding? Do they want good media coverage? I mean, seriously, that's what it comes down to. I think they'll quickly toe the line once they understand what's involved. That's like this resolution that said the United States guarantees the security for the state of Israel as a Jewish state. It passed unanimously. And that's amazing. That's Democrats, Republicans. And could you imagine any other country saying we recognize Hungary for the Hungarians, meaning we don't want Muslims in there or anything else? Oh, I mean, there'd be some may vote for it, but so many, especially on the Democrats, would be opposed to that. They'd call it racist, it's ethnic nationalism, it's a form of Nazism. But this is unanimous. So that's typically how it does. And in fact, years ago, the only people, if there was one vote against something like this, there would be a vote for Israel for aid. And it passed unanimously, except for one vote. And that was always like Ron Paul. He was kind of did his own thing. But beginning to back to your question, I'm a little skeptical if these new younger people are going to be able to keep their foundations, because they'll quickly see they won't get the funding, they won't get the good media exposure, and it could be very limiting to the career, what they could do, unless they play ball with the people that have the money and the power.
Hey, you know what, you mentioned Hungary and what the attitudes would be if someone proposed like Hungary for the Hungarians. Well, there was a clip on CNN, Amanpour, this whoop-de-doo reporter on CNN, the international reporter there. Mm-hmm. And I believe she's married to a Jewish guy, by the way. But anyway, the subject of the interview that I think it was a foreign minister in Hungary, should Hungary be a Catholic country? Should it be like, should we be able to retain our demography? Let's just take a look at this, Ramzi, and I'm sure you'll identify with this, since you have a connection to Hungary, you spend a lot of time there and stuff like that. But just see that even just proposing that the religion, which is the founding religion of Hungary, is to be remaining, is that so-called controversial subject. Just check this out.
As I try to pursue exactly what your government is trying to be, your Prime Minister Orban, has repeatedly said that his main aim is to preserve, quote, Christian Hungary. And you've said, we don't accept that multiculturalism is a value by itself. Less than 2% of Hungarians were born outside the country. It's weird, that kind of language. It's very out of step.
No,
with
it's honest.
The
world. It's honest.
It's honest, okay? It's honest from your perspective.
Yeah.
But what are you saying, that anything other than white Christians into your country are not accepted?
No one said that.
Prime Minister did say a Christian Hungary.
Yeah.
You deserve a Christian Hungary.
Yeah, because we have been a Christian country for a millennium. And I don't really understand why is it bad news that we don't want to change that. And I don't understand why is it bad or why is it unacceptable that we would like to stick to our history, to our culture, to our heritage, to our religion. And in this case, I can tell you that we never judged other countries which had different kind of policies. We never judged countries who said that multiculturalism is more valuable than a homogeneous society, for example. But let's leave it to the certain countries. Let's leave it to us to make a decision whether we think multiculturalism is more valuable than a homogeneous society. I understand we don't agree on that, but I respect that you have a different position, and I'm not going to judge you on that. I'll find you a very sympathetic person, independently from this. So I will never judge you, but I expect the same, that we think this way. And please, let's leave it to a sovereign decision of a nation, how it would like to continue its life in its own country. So yes, we think that a country sticking to its heritage, its culture, its religion, is as valuable as another one, which thinks that multiculturalism is better than that.
Right. So, do you think she even would approach anyone from like Israel, an Israeli foreign minister that talked about, let's preserve it as a Jewish state? No, that would never even be an issue on CNN. It would even be an issue on any mainstream media channel. Here, they're like charging them like they're crazy kooks for suggesting to retain Hungary the way it is,
Yeah, and Szijjártó, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, he did it well, but what he should have done, and I've learned, is always turn it back to Israel on them, because they it gets very uncomfortable, they don't know how to answer, and you say, well, hey, does Israel have the right to be Jewish? Doesn't mean everyone, 100%, because typically when you ask that, they'll say, well, not everyone is Jewish in Israel, and you're like, yeah, fine, but you guys were committed to keeping that a Jewish state, do you oppose that? I've been asked this many times in interviews, and every time, without exception, I turn that around on them. They don't know how to respond, because they support Israel as a Jewish state, and it's this double standard, and they realize it, and they don't really have a good answer. So I would recommend if anyone asks that to say, hey, we just want what like the Jews have with Israel. We as Hungarians want the homeland like the Jews do. We support them and their right to homeland. Please have the courtesy support us. That's a powerful argument. Don't ever get defensive and have to try to explain why you have we don't have to explain why we have a right to homeland. Everyone has a right to homeland. They need to explain why that they're opposed to us to have the right to self-determination, but they support it for Jewish people. Make them explain that. Turn it around on them. Put them on the defensive. And I've done that with reporters, and that they can't handle it. They don't know what to do.
And this idea, too, that every single country that is has been founded by Europeans need to be multicultural. There's like not a single country can deviate from the multiculturalist, from the globalist, really. That's what it is, right? Because I think that also serves as an example of what will happen in a country that doesn't have it, right? Then everyone else can point to that country and say, see, look, it's safer now. And, you know, we know that. You know, Sweden, Norway, is still there to a certain extent. Denmark used to be at the top of the happiness indexes and all these kinds of things, right? But as they have fallen off, Ramsey, Hungary, Poland, and these countries have risen up to that chart for that reason, because they're largely homogenous.
Yeah, and they don't want any country to be free of that, because you're right. People will see the standard and they're like, what the hell? In Budapest, they have a Christmas market, and they don't have anti-terrorist barriers or anything like that.
Yeah.
They don't need it. They don't have terrorist attacks. Why is that? Why don't they have terrorist attacks? Can anyone explain that? And see, they don't want to show the difference, and so they're trying to destroy all these countries. They can't allow any country to remain separate because we're already seeing in Hungary now, a lot of people from Germany and Sweden and places that have been enriched, they're retiring into Hungary, which I don't like. I really don't like it, because it reminds me of what happened to Colorado. I don't want those shitlibs from Sweden to come into Hungary and then decide to screw it up. But that's happening, and people are starting to move there or to take their vacations there because they don't want to be in an area that's been enriched.
Yeah, that's right. We're just going to take a short little break here shortly, and then we can continue talking about much more in the second segment. We have some stuff of Trump defending Saudi Arabia, which is interesting. There's a total collapse on that recently in terms of like not standing up to that. And what happened overall with actually being against the wars, as you pointed out in one of your tweets, pull out of Afghanistan, stop with the Iraq business, stop with, encouraging more refugees basically to come into the Western world. But tell people about your YouTube channel. You're on Twitter still. Have you had any issues with strikes or being blocked from Twitter or anything like that in the recent freak out by whoever it is that's pulling behind the scenes?
No, I'm a good little boy. I'm very respectful for everyone, and I've never had a strike on Twitter actually. So there's kind of a way you have to do it on Twitter. It's kind of all these censorship is hard to understand, because they're really not black and white rules, but you have to try to figure out what it is. But there's certain things, like if someone argues with you on the left, they can call you all sorts of names. But if you respond, they'll flag you for harassment, and you'll get the strike. So you have to kind of navigate the censorship. But so far, I've been fortunate, knock on wood. So
yeah, that's good. You and Tina, of course, is doing a show as well, live show every Saturday, Happy Homelands. That's good. I recommend people check that out.
Yeah, we do that every Saturday, and it's a different type of live stream. It's not like blood sports where it's a big debate. It's more we have a lot of diversity of opinions on our show, which is good too. And we're respectful, and we talk about the subject. So it's kind of a fun, cozy weekend type of show. Then I do my videos usually four times a week. So people subscribe to my channel. My videos are usually pretty short, so it's not a whole time commitment. Our Happy Homelands is a little bit longer, but it's a different format.
Yeah, exactly. And then your Twitter as well at Ramsey Paul. Check it out, folks. We're just going to take a short break here, and then we'll be back with Ramsey Paul in the second part. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Well, join us in part two at redicemembers.com for more with Ramsey Paul. We're just going to take a short break here, and then we're going to continue. We have much more to discuss, so definitely join us at redicemembers.com. Head on over there, sign up, and tune in. If you're not yet a member, try it out. You can sign up for a three-month subscription. You can use cryptos. You can also use credit card. There's a number of other ways that you can pay as well with the Cash App. We do have Skrill for European audiences. And we also have Swish for the Swedes out there as well. So check out alternative payment methods if you so feel if those are better or work better for you. It's all on redicemembers.com. Just click that sign up button and you'll see all of the details right there. And to you guys who are in America, have a great Thanksgiving and don't have any guilt over the celebrations. I guess we can call it. We're actually going to talk about that with Ramsey Paul in the second part, that the mainstream culture is trying to inject guilt into these festivities, the times that you spend with your family. So don't have guilt over these things. Don't let that bullshit get to you. It's nothing to do with you. So definitely have a good time with your family and enjoy it as is without all the bullshit laid on top of it. But more coming up, guys. Flashback Friday. Tune in for that. As you might be aware, not live streaming to YouTube currently due to the strike, so we are live streaming to Twitter and to our Facebook page. So make sure you follow us there for a nice, laid-back, and more fun live stream that we do on Fridays. And we're going to implement embed a proper player on redicemembers.com as well. We always upload everything to Red Ice Members, so you can always catch it there, of course. But we'll bring in a player on the members' website as well. We previously used the embeddable YouTube player on the members' site when we did the public live streams and stuff like that. But we'll bring that back, so you can tune in there, or through Twitter, or through Facebook. And, of course, then don't miss Weekend Warrior coming up right after that. More produced show if you're new to it. A lot of news coverage and original research on a lot of different topics in the Weekend Warrior shows as well. So it's not just, the disposable media of current events that we cover in those shows. There's a lot of meat in there as well. So definitely tune in and check it out if you haven't already. I do think you'll enjoy it. Alright guys, well, until next time, take care, stay strong, and we'll see you guys soon. But join us for part 2 with Ramsey Paul at redicemembers.com coming up right now.